Go. All right. Hello, everybody. You are listening to another episode of Who Wants to Take It? There we go. Nerds Polish Nerds.
We should have all done like one part. Like I should have done nerds and then Tanner did polish and then you do turds. Next time.
Next time. Next time, baby. All right. I'm one of your hosts, Avery Polinori. With me tonight are my hosts. You just heard from Mason. Mason, say hi.
I'm back.
He's back. Hello. Yes, after his Halloween break from our Ghost Rider episode.
Yeah, I was really just living up the Halloween life. Actually, CenturyLink is terrible. Never recommend.
Yeah. You heard it here, folks. This podcast is sponsored by CenturyLink. Don't get it.
No, it was sponsored by CenturyLink. No, we're not. Take like 18 years for the first episode to finally air.
Yep. I mean, I wasn't saying we were using it, but or at least not all of us.
Technically, Mason is.
Yeah, I am.
Woo! Armstrong Cable, baby.
That's right. Also with me tonight is Tanner, who you just heard from a second ago. Say hi, Tanner.
Hello.
Hello, Tanner. And then also, for the first time ever as an official guest on Nerd Polish Nerds, we have my fiance and best friend, Alexa Thompson.
Oh, that's cringe.
Hello, I'm Alexa.
So there are four of us tonight. And there's a very significant reason that there's four of us, because we are not talking about just one or two, but all three theatrically released Fantastic Four movies from Marvel. What? That's right, everybody. We are rolling in all of the turds.
Yeah.
Rolling in the deep. Okay. Anyway, so basically tonight's going to look a little different, where we're not going to do our usual routine of going over how we would make the film better or what we didn't like about it. We're going to talk about these notoriously subpar to bad superhero movies. And we're going to have a good old fashioned Thanksgiving dinner argument over which one is best.
Mine is the Thanksgiving meal. Feels bad.
Yeah. So Alexa is going to unbiasedly as possible judge who has the best Fantastic Four movie. So basically, we each watched our own movie. Mason, you watched Fantastic Four from, is it 2005 when it came out?
Yep.
Yeah.
Tanner's got the facts here. Tanner watched the sequel, Fantastic Four, Rise of the Silver Surfer.
By request, too. So if he wins, got an asterisk.
Yeah. He probably had the easiest job, or will have had the easiest job tonight, but...
Avery probably also has the hardest. We'll throw that in there.
That's right. I watched the Fantastic Four reboot, also lovingly known by fans as Fan-Four-Stick.
Fan-Four-Stick,
baby. Because of how the marketing advertised the trailer. But anyway, if you're unfamiliar with the Fantastic Four, the characters from Marvel Comics, this is kind of a bio from Marvel.com. Reed Richards, Ben Grimm, Susan Storm, and her brother, Johnny Storm, were forever changed during an experimental space flight that exposed them to cosmic rays, which gave them superhuman powers and abilities. Now, as Mr. Fantastic, Invisible Woman, Human Torch, and the Thing, they utilize their scientific backgrounds to band together and defend the world against perilous threats. They might be superheroes, but they are a family first.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Wait, where'd you get this from?
Marvel.com.
Okay. I thought this was like one of the the movies that said this, and I was like, first off, none of them really use science in these movies. But
well, they use a ton of science in my movie, but we'll talk about that later. So how should we work? But basically what we're going to do is we're going to break this down into discussion. First, we're going to talk about the cinematography of each movie, then the character relationships, and then we'll break it down into the plot, then the action and acting, and finally, the villain and or villains of the movie. So I figured we could probably just go in order of which they came out. So Mason, I guess we could start off for you with the Fantastic Four, solely based on cinematography.
Cinematography, you
say? Yeah.
Well,
or cinematography.
I want to point this out. Cinematography. While I prepare myself, you want to give them a definition of that, Avery, if you know it?
Sure, yeah. It's almost like you might need a definition too. I'm just kidding.
Oh, really? You want me to give you a definition?
If you have, yeah, sure.
It's just basically the movie, like the motion picture of it all. Mm-hmm. Boom. Slapped together. That's the
picture of it all. Specifically with these types of movies, the special effects and like visual composition is a huge part of it. But yeah.
Okay.
Cinematography.
So I feel like Tanner is going to basically kind of be right around the same with me, because I don't know when his came out, but we just said mine came out in 2005. Did we say when his came out? Oh, well.
His came out 2007.
I mean, right? So.
Yeah, 2007.
Yeah.
2005, it's not like special effects were as groundbreaking as they are now. You got to keep that in mind. That being said, I feel like. Really? Come on. Okay. Anyway.
The Fantastic Four dog, Shiloh.
Shiloh, I'm busy. Okay. Anyway. Anyway, I feel like it was good. I personally, unless it's really bad, never really put that much into special effects. Either if it's really bad, then it catches my eye.
Right.
Or if it's like really, really good, like amazing, it, like Avatar, for example, in its time, you know.
Yeah.
I think everything looked fine. I feel like the Thing kind of looked a little weird with his lips, to be honest. But otherwise, for that, I don't really have much to say on the whole subject.
Alexa's looking up the Thing's lips in that movie.
I don't know why, but to me, I think they look weird. Other than that, though, I would say it all, for 2005 standards, it was up to par. It was up to snuff.
Okay.
All right.
Tanner, how was the cinematography and the Rise of Silver Surfer?
I'd say it was probably a step up from the first one, because it's, you know, the sequel 2 years later. But it's definitely kind of funny, like Iron Man came out a year after it, and it's nowhere even close to Iron Man in terms of like the quality of visual effects. Sure. So I think, I'm sure probably that has to do with budget.
Yeah.
Like, you know, but yeah, it wasn't that great. Even from like a like film shot
perspective.
Like, you know, perspective, it even wasn't like nothing great.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's a lot of like small sets. There wasn't a lot to work with.
True.
Really. In terms of like spacing, that like, they weren't out in the field. Maybe a little bit for like Germany scenes when this like trying to catch the Silver Surfer, but there wasn't much there to work with, I feel like, in terms of camera. But and like I said, video effects, like it's pretty much on par for that time period, but nothing exceptional, and you know, fails comparison to Iron Man.
Yeah, you can't help but compare it to something like that that came out the next year. But yeah. Anything else from you that you thought about with the visual aspect of the movie?
I think they did a good job portraying the powers with what they had.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Tanner, yours and Mason are pretty similar because they both have the same director and pretty much the same production team behind both of them. So not a lot of difference there. What's that? Good.
I thought they did the best on the Human Torch.
Yeah.
He looked pretty good. Ben was okay. But,
I love all prosthetics, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I said, though, the lips, off-putting.
Yep. All right. Well, I'm going to talk about Fan4Stick with the... I'm going to talk about Fan4Stick with the cinematography. And just a quick note, since mine is definitely... regarded by many as the worst of the Fantastic Four movies, I'm going to solely focus on the positive here because I feel like I have the biggest uphill climb to go to. But so something that stands out, obviously special effects has come a long way from, I think, 2015 when this came out, or to 2015 from 2007, 2005. So this one does have a little bit of an advantage over yours. No offense, guys. But in addition to that, they also have like a really cool design where they go to another dimension instead of outer space, which is something that we don't see a lot. And the planet that they go to in this other dimension looks really cool. It's like something primordial. Looks like a cross between like an alien landscape and like Jurassic times or something like that. And there's green lava everywhere. And the sky looks like it's like baking a super storm or something. So I think that's really cool. It helps with the tone of the movie, which kind of in that sequence is sci-fi horror. One thing I think a lot of people didn't like about this film, but I kind of liked where they were going with it, was the darker lighting that they had in all the scenes that made it feel a little more real and made their scientific endeavors feel more real and less like comic booky and everything, which obviously is like a comic book film. And that's not necessarily a bad thing if it feels that way. But I think with the fact that they were trying to update this and make it feel like an actual group of scientists like exploring something new and unknown, it made it gave a good reason for the reboot to me. So that's why I thought of the cinematography for that one. But yeah, Alexa, do you want to pick a winner for the cinematography, or do you just want to score them privately and add them all up at the end?
I'm gonna
do it at the end. Yeah,
it's gonna be at the end.
All right,
I don't want anybody to get a big head or anything.
Okay, secret ballot.
We're all gonna drive to your guys' apartment, and she's gonna like lift up the hand of the winner. Actually,
yeah,
it'd be great for a podcast.
Yeah, you have to really loudly like slap our hand and make sure you wave the hand right in front of the mic so he'll hear the air and everything.
Yeah.
All right. The next topic, good job, gentlemen, by the way. The next topic is the character relationships, which is probably one of the most important parts of a Fantastic Four movie. As we saw from the Marvel.com description, they are known as Marvel's first family. So
I know that, what's his name? Johnny Storm. And what's his sister?
Sue Storm.
Sue Storm. They're obviously siblings, but how do the other two factor in before we start this off? I don't know how they know each other.
Okay, so I would say maybe just get into that while you talk about it for each movie.
Okay.
Okay, so I think in the first one, the relationships are believable. They're like, I could see they gel well together, the relationships, but it's also a little spotty at times. I feel like sometimes it was a little like cringy. I feel like where they could have done better was with Sue and Johnny, because I feel like it was more of like the little like brother and sister just like bickering instead of them talking to one another like an actual adult.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, so you know that relationship. And then there's Ben. Ben, I'm pretty sure he's the buddy of Reed, right? Which is the thing.
Yeah.
He's buddies with Reed. And I mean, in this movie, Ben kind of is the one that goes through the, I'm just gonna start calling him the thing. The thing is the one that goes through the biggest, I would say, story arc technically, because of the whole, his wife, oh, that's another relationship. His what? He's got a wife when he was a normal looking human named Ben.
Okay.
And then the cosmic storm hits, and you know, he's this big orange looking rock monster, and she straight up was like, yeah, look, I'm done. She doesn't like
his lips. She's out.
Yeah, she doesn't. She really doesn't, because she doesn't want to kiss them anymore, because she literally leaves. She's like, okay, you're a hideous orange rock monster, paraphrasing, of course. She literally does leave.
She like drops, she sees him save people, and she drops her.
They're on the bridge. He just saves like some guy from killing himself too, and there's the whole scene around it, and she literally walks up, takes her ring off, sets it on the bridge, and just walks away. Like,
wow.
First off, I feel like, okay, that relationship, it wasn't even, you don't even really see that much screen time with them. But I feel like that's one of the best relationships, just because it tells his story and you see what he goes through after all of that happens. It's not really the relationship, I feel like, that was the best part of that. It was the fallout and how he dealt with it and how it went in with the team too, because even Johnny and him butted heads about, you know, he kind of just more like poked fun at him, made jokes about, you know, him being like, oh, big and bulky and just kind of more hideous. But, you know, obviously with his wife leaving him, it actually affected him emotionally. So the relationship between Ben and Johnny, which is the Human Torch, was more about butting heads, because he was supposed to be, you know, the quote unquote, like the bad boy of the four.
Mm-hmm.
They literally introduce him in our movie. Like, they start playing rock music when they literally say his name. It's like, okay, we get it. 2005. That's how you assert that someone's the bad boy of the group.
Yeah.
So him and Ben were just basically butting heads throughout the whole movie. That was basically their relationship, was just kind of butting heads the whole time, mainly because he was this grotesque monster, according to Human Torch, and Ben, you know, was trying to come to the realization of his powers. Let's see. Reed and Mr. Fantastic and the Invisible Woman, I'm pretty sure is her superhero name, right?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. Yes. I don't know. I just feel like it was plagued by not great acting when they were together. I don't think they
kind of have like a romantic relationship, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they've got a romantic relationship, and I don't know. I just didn't really buy it myself personally. It felt just like they were trying to use that to stretch out the movie time. They're like, we'll have them fight about... I just watched this movie last week and I already can't tell you what the fight was about. That's obviously not a good thing in writing. Like, I think they just differed on opinions on what to do about their powers. I don't remember who was on which side, but it just felt like the writers were like, okay, guys, we need a conflict, but we can't really have it involve Dr. Doom, which I know we're going to talk about villains, so I'll save that for later. So they're like, okay, we'll have Reed and Susan fight over something kind of more moot. So it just seems like they basically weren't even really in a relationship.
Yeah.
Mm.
So I would say the best relationship would either just be the Thing and his wife, not best, because obviously that was a bad relationship, but just the one that was the best throughout the movie, just because it played into the story the most and the best.
Got it.
What did you think of Ben and the blind woman he met at the bar? I think her name was Alicia.
Yeah, I mean, that was, again, it was a nice balance. Even though she couldn't see, it didn't really matter to her. So I like the parallels between his wife or fiance. Yeah. I can't remember if they were married or if they were engaged, actually. I'm drawing a blank here because this movie is not good.
Well, they never went to divorce court, so maybe she was just his fiance.
That's true. Yeah, I think it was just fiance. But anyway, I like the parallel between her. Basically, it was all about the look of how he was now, and then he met this blind lady just randomly at a bar too. She's like, "Hey, another one. Hey, one on the house for me," and that's literally how they met.
Nice.
Yeah. It was literally like, I saw him across the bar. Well, actually, she couldn't. Sorry.
Oh, my God.
But anyway, again, the focal point on that still is the Thing. I like how they made it. I like how they showed through her and that relationship that, you know, it's not all about the looks. If you connect on a certain level, you know, that's really the important part of it.
Connecting the heart.
Wow. Amazing.
Wow. All right. Any other things you want to say about the character dynamics in Fantastic Four, Mason?
Just the fact that they basically, Dr. Doom, I feel like they tried to make him too ominous. Mm. And like, he didn't really mesh well with anybody, like dialogue wise even before he was full on Dr. Doom, he didn't really mesh that well with anybody. I felt like he was just kind of like a thorn in their side, like more of an annoyance than anything. Mm. So I'll throw that in there.
Okay,
good to know for later.
All right, yeah, we'll get into that more with the villain aspect. All right, Tanner, let's talk about the Rise of Silver Surfer character dynamics, relationships.
Well, I'll start out with Reed and Sue, and they're attempting their fourth wedding, or their fourth attempt at a wedding. They're trying to get married.
That's
fourth time.
Is a charm.
But it wasn't, because the Silver Surfer showed up and the helicopter ruined their wedding.
Stanley also showed up. That was one of my favorite parts in that movie, but carry on.
That's one of his best cameos. Yeah.
Yeah.
Stanley, he was on the list, but they didn't believe it was him.
Yeah, he's like, I'm Stan Lee. Like, sorry, bud, go home.
But
I did forget about that.
Yeah.
But Reed and Sue, their like biggest conflict is like Reed working and not paying attention to Sue.
Mm.
And it's just so cliche. I think it's something out of like, you know, a sitcom.
Yeah.
It's just a bad dynamic. It doesn't work, I think, that well. It just kind of like Mason said, like, it's just kind of there to add a little bit of conflict between the two of them, because they don't know what to do with them.
Need like some inflated conflict. They always go to Sue and Reed fighting.
But I think the one thing that is kind of makes sense about that is about them wanting to settle down. Talking about that, like that's kind of real. Like, you're in the spotlight, you're superheroes, but you question about having a family in that lifestyle. Like, that was some good dynamic there, which led to some conflict, I think, between like the two of them and Johnny and Ben, because Johnny overheard them talking about settling down and he didn't want to give up the superhero life because they were the Fantastic Four, not just like him. Even though, like,
dynamic duo.
Yeah. I think they knew Johnny would be a good superhero by himself, but he knows he can't. Like, he needs them to be a good superhero.
Yeah.
So that was it. So I got the Thing still with this blind woman?
He was, yes. It wasn't much. There wasn't like much to it, really. There's a couple of jokes between Johnny and him about that, like how he has sex without her dying. You know, without her dying in a rock slide.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
All right.
But she was there, you know, still supportive of him.
Dude, I need to watch this movie.
But it's like, you know, it's just good. It's a good continuation, but nothing like focused on too much.
Okay.
But like Johnny and Ben, then like they had still had their like kind of beating each other up, but they had some good moments between the two of them. Like they're in a bar together, and like basically saying like they've got each other's backs, even if Reed and Sue leave the Fantastic Four.
Okay.
So like that was a really good character development moment.
Yeah.
I also like the dynamic between Sue and the Silver Surfer, because she was like the one that was able to like kind of reach out to him and get him to actually speak.
Can you
why he's on Earth?
Can you explain? Because Alexa hasn't seen any of these movies. Oh, who the Silver Surfer is, at least in this movie's context.
Yeah. So the Silver Surfer is this cosmic being who comes to Earth and starts creating craters around the world. And the reason is Galactus, the planet-eating cloud in this movie.
Okay.
In the comics, he's a man, but kind of a man being. But in this, it's just a cloud, like a.
All right.
So he's there, and he like basically finds worlds for Galactus to eat, so he can stay alive.
Okay. But
he goes around actually like is like actually causing like it's a snow in Egypt. I think like the ocean froze in Japan, like area. And he even like went past their, or kind of as like the reason that caused for the ruining their wedding, it could cause the nationwide blackout in the US.
Oh, okay.
Caused the helicopter to fall onto the wedding of Reed and Sue, and why they didn't get married.
Interesting. But, all
right. But they had a good dynamic, Sue and the Silver Surfer, because like she asked him why he was doing what he was doing, and he's like basically this for his planet survival. And the reason he would talk to Sue is because she reminded him of his wife.
Okay.
And Dr. Doom is also in this one in a smaller.
Yeah, he's just kind of there. Again, Thorn in their side.
Yeah.
Like, he just kind of shows up.
Right.
Like, he was frozen, but the Silver Surfer caused him to unfreeze. Yeah. And actually, the Silver Surfer healed him too. When Dr. Doom tried to attack the Silver Surfer,
yeah.
So he like looks like his not longer a metal body. He's like back to the skin and bone.
Yeah. Oh, so part of Dr. Doom.
I guess I shouldn't mention.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just gonna briefly explain Dr. Doom from these movies, but basically he gets his. Caught in the same accident that gives the Fantastic Four their powers.
Okay.
But he kind of goes insane and kills a bunch of people. And in these movies, he has the power to. What's that?
Has she ever seen Spider-Man? Because basically, his transition into Doctor Doom is kind of like the Green Goblin.
Yeah, where he kills all the board members. Anyway, his skin's like falling off and he has like metal underneath his skin. So he has to put on this like metal mask and everything.
Mm.
And what Tanner was just talking about is the Silver Surfer heals him in the next movie.
I see. All right.
Yeah. And I will mention that Reed and Sue do get married at the end of the movie.
Okay.
So the will they, won't they finally comes to a close.
And they'll still stay part of the Fantastic Four.
Okay.
So the team does come together and fun. Because Sue dies.
Oh yeah.
What?
I actually forgot about that.
Yeah. You cut out there for a second. I think it was a piece of debris.
Sue dies. Yeah. But then the Silver Surfer like resurrected her.
Okay.
Yeah.
How sweet.
He's a zombie now, actually. That's how Marvel zombies started.
Marvel zombies, you're right. Actually, the Fantastic Four were the first comics to debut the Marvel Zombies.
See? It's all coming together.
All coming together.
Oh. I guess I don't know. Should I mention, and then Johnny had like his could swap powers during this movie.
Oh yeah, that was something.
Because of the Silver Surfer.
I ask if that was in that.
Yeah. The Silver Surfer touched Johnny and it caused him to like swap powers with the other Fantastic Four if he touched them. So he actually like during the movie he like becomes the Thing at one point. Like Chris Evans in the prosthetics. Mm-hmm. He also trades with he also trades places with his sister. He touches her and she catches on fire and starts floating away and turns invisible.
Yeah.
And then they swap back and of course they do the like in the first movie they do the naked joke.
Both these movies.
Alba. I was gonna get to that later.
They try to find ways to get Jessica Alba partially naked in both of those movies.
They literally just they showed her bra and underwear. They're like, "Yep, that's good enough."
Yep.
But at the end, they give him all his powers, and he helps the Silver Surfer.
Becomes the Fantastic One. End movie.
So it actually turns out that Johnny never needed the team until he lost that power switching power.
Yeah
he killed the rest of the Fantastic Four. He didn't need no
Tanner. Any other thoughts on the Silver Surfer character dynamics?
I mean, he's pretty much a silent type, so no one much to him really. He's just kind of doing his job.
Just a guy doing his job out in the universe.
Working man.
Guy being a dude.
But then he realizes that he can't stand by and let people die.
Yeah.
All right. Then I guess it's time for the fan four stick character relationships.
Okay.
All right. So I will say everything good about the character relationships in this movie happen in like the first two acts of the movie. And then the third act is basically from a different movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's no resolution, no good resolution to anything.
Mm-hmm.
But what is good about it is that we actually like see all of them like, or not all of them, but all of them coming together for the first time. So we see like, and it's not just like through dialogue that we learn about the relationship. So in this one, Sue is actually adopted by Johnny's father.
Okay.
Which I think basically was to explain why they had a black actor and a white actress as brother and sister.
Okay.
But it shows Ben and Reed meeting as kids, where Reed's like talking about his dream to create a teleportation machine, and Ben's just kind of this small town kid who's like a tough kid, grows up at a junkyard and everything, but he's like takes an interest in Reed because he's like weird and everything. And then we see kind of why Johnny is a bad boy type, like when he interacts with his father, who is actually a huge part of the story of this film. And their father is like this super renowned scientist, works for the government and everything, works at the Baxter building, which in this world is like a super superb like scientific research facility. But Johnny, who is actually really smart in this one, he's a bad boy because he doesn't really get any good attention from his father. So he's just kind of more rebellious than like stupid and reckless. Then we also see kind of how all these characters contrast with each other in their daily lives. I think part of that is because like most of the movie is focused on them like and their scientific expedition and less on them as superheroes. So we see like Reed's like nerdiness in contrast with like Ben's stoic tough guy attitude, where Ben's kind of like the muscle that helps him put his teleportation machine together, and Reed's just kind of like this kid that wants to win the science fair and everything.
Mm-hmm.
We see how Johnny's bad boy, rebellious attitude juxtaposes with his sister Sue, who's like the model child because she's a scientist like their dad and everything. And then with Victor, who is actually Dr. Doom, Victor Von Doom. Victor is, you know, he's just as smart and supposedly a little smarter than Reed, but he's really indifferent about like what his impact in the world is. And Reed like actually wants to do something like worthwhile. So we kind of see how their attitudes on everything develop and how the way they interact with and around each other really emphasizes who they are as characters, which I thought was really cool. And we also see this shown a little more with Ben and Reed, where Reed actually gets invited to join the team right out of high school in the Baxter building on this big research project to build an actual teleportation machine. And Ben kind of has to stay home, and he's stuck at the junkyard and everything while Reed's in this new scientific environment. I also really like that they use Dr. Storm, Dr. Franklin Storm, Johnny and Sue's father, as kind of like he ends up becoming a father figure to the entire team and not just those two, because he's like a mentor for Reed. He's like a role model type for him. And then for Victor, he's kind of like, he sees all this potential in Victor that's manifesting in Reed that never manifests in Victor and everything. And then with the relationship between Sue and Reed, I think it makes a little more sense because Sue is also like a gifted scientist in this. So their relationship, like they have more to connect over. And she's not like the same type of scientist that he is, but they both like have similar working brains. She's just a little less super passionate and nerdy about everything, but she's equally as gifted. And then I also like the relationship between Doom and Reed in this. They are still rivals like they are in the other films, but it's not just like romantic rivals. Doom and Reed kind of are competitive buddies at first. So I thought that was cool. And while there is kind of a pseudo love triangle that's very briefly touched upon between Victor, Reed, and Sue, I like it better in this one because it's because they respect and admire Sue as like a colleague and a friend rather than like this hot supermodel to possess. So in that sense, it's a little more fleshed out. And then after they all get their superpowers, like the story forgets all these things that they had to work with. But other than that, I thought the character dynamics were really cool. And I think if this had been like a longer series instead of just like one film, then they could have stretched that out even more.
Or even just they don't completely shift tones in the second half. And this movie had potential.
Yes. Yeah. And
yeah, then Fox got involved.
Yeah, there's a lot of rumors of like studio interference and basically recutting the ending of the movie to make it more superhero-y, for better or worse. But
you could kind of—it was for worse. There was no better in the second half of this movie.
Yeah, right. So, but yeah, I thought that was really cool to see all that, and I think it made all their relationships more believable for the first part of the movie.
I was going to say, I feel like character relationships, actually, Fan4Stick does have the edge because I feel like that's what they were going for in the first half of the movie.
Yeah.
Showing you the connections and making the first family, like the first superhero family, believable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, I will say, like, the chemistry's not super strong with all of them together, but we can get into that more when we talk about the acting. But next part we're going to talk about is the plot, which we've all kind of hinted at a little bit. But basically, the major story beats larger character arcs, maybe not every character, but kind of all the characters as a whole. What do we think of the plot? Maybe the ideas at play here.
So, plot for mine is you have these scientists going in to space on their mission. They get hit with this cosmic blast of energy, all because basically Ben, because of two things. Reed didn't calculate the storm correctly because they knew this storm was coming. They did know that this cosmic burst of energy was coming, but he just calculated that it was supposed to show up 7 hours later, so they were going to be done with the mission and everything, and they were going to be out of harm's way by the time this storm came.
Like a very that's a lot of time.
Yeah, big miscalculation.
Yeah, and then he's like, I miscalculated. It's like, you miscalculated by 7 hours?
You're not a scientist, bro. He had a lot of hours to account for.
Wow. Okay, what's the other thing?
Was your math be let go with Jessica Alba on board?
No, it wouldn't be. Actually, yeah, it would be. I'd want to show her that I'm not an idiot.
All right.
Hey, that's the dum-dum that got the thing all wrong. I'm going to stay away from him. Anyway, the second part is once they kind of, like, you can see this cosmic storm coming, Ben was out on, like, the he was on, like, the skywalk or the moonwalk, whatever you want to call it. Like, doing a spacewalk. Yeah, okay. That's what it was. I knew it was some spacey term, but I didn't go with the generic one.
Michael Jackson was there doing a moonwalk.
He said, cameos,
Stanley and Michael Jackson. So he was out doing the spacewalk and Reed's like, hey dude, the storm's coming, get in here like right now, you're in danger. And instead he's like, hey man, quit rushing me, instead of being like, oh okay, because he's not gonna, you know, think logically and be like, oh shoot, I'm gonna go back into the space station. So yeah. Instead he stays out there, and the reason they basically actually get all of their powers is because they were trying to save Ben and make sure that he didn't, you know, die out there, because he, for whatever reason, didn't want to listen to Reed being like, hey man, the storm's coming, get on out of there.
Or look at the giant cloud. Or look at the
giant orange like cloud that is like right over to his left. It's like, oh, I probably want to get inside right about now.
I mean, to be fair, this was like a once in a lifetime chance to, I think they were trying to like record data from the storm or whatever. So
yeah, okay.
It was important that Ben finished what he was
doing. All right, well, have fun dying then, Ben. Peace out, Lane. Peace out.
For data. It's all for data.
Okay, whatever. Anyway, so they get their powers. And basically, since this is legitimately the first ever Fantastic Four movie, it was kind of your typical, origin story. They're figuring out their powers. They stumble across some of their powers by accident. The whole, like, Brooklyn Bridge thing is what kind of really draws them together. I think it was the Brooklyn Bridge. I'm 90% sure on that one.
You're right.
And let's see. Plot-wise, it was basically them kind of just coming to terms with their powers, and then out of nowhere, because Victor got exposed to this too, he just immediately decides, you know, I think I'm going to become a villain because I'm bored, and the board members are kind of like douchebags to me. So I'm going to go on a murderous rampage.
He's bored and rich. What else are we going to do?
Yeah, he's bored. He's probably like, dude, I've done everything else. I might as well become a supervillain.
I mean, that's the next step.
That's the next thing. When you become like super rich, pretty soon Jeff Bezos is going to be like donning some like mecked out suit, and we're gonna be like, oh crap, Bezos at it again. Elon Musk is gonna like rise up and become like a Batman of like the real world. Probably gonna happen in 2020, who knows at this point. Anyway, so he basically kind of, I will say, despite the fact that I don't really like that Doom just kind of becomes a villain to have a villain in their movie, he looks cool with his mask. They made it look very comic book accurate, and I think his comic book depiction is really cool. That's just me personally speaking. I don't really know his powers in the comics, but he's basically just like, I'm going to electrocute you. That's mainly what it was in the first movie. And I mean, he, as Avery alluded to, I actually forgot to, he kind of had like a thing for Sue. So I feel like that was legitimately his main reason for kind of hating them in this movie. At least that's like what the movie tries to tell me. The plot is basically just, let's try and figure out what our superpowers are and adapt to our new lives. And then at the end, they're kind of, the movie producers were probably just like, the directors were like, we kind of need a villain, so let's just throw Doom in here. And they did so terrible. They did him dirty in the end. Like, they made him like basically a statue that you could put out on your front yard at the end of the movie. They did him dirty. They made him powerful, though. I will say that's good on them. But that was basically the plot, is we have superpowers now. How do we deal with this in our everyday lives? That was really the main plot of the first movie.
Okay.
Now, how do we get Jessica Alba naked? That was also part of the plot. They're like, we've got to do it.
Yeah. What now for the in terms of like showing off who the characters are and taking them on a journey, do you feel like that plot works for it? Or do you
the only person that they did that with was the Thing?
Okay.
It basically was. He went on the whole, you know, like rediscovering who you are after he got turned into a giant orange rock monster. Johnny was, I felt like, still the same throughout the whole movie. I feel like he maybe like mellowed out a little bit towards the end, but they didn't really ever show it.
Yeah.
Kind of just at the end, more mellowed out. And I feel like Sue and Reed kind of just stayed the same throughout the whole thing, maybe just a little bit more open-minded to Ben and Johnny and their shenaniganeries.
Coin that phrase.
So I just would like to point out that the only reference that I have for Dr. Doom is that cartoon where they have like really large feet in their short
The Superhero Squad.
Yeah, that is the only
where he's trying to get
frame
the,
of reference.
He's trying to get the Infinity Stones like Thanos. Okay.
So this is Dr. Doom. Picture metal. Picture that all on his body, except he's wearing like a dark green coat looking like thing with a hood over and a iron mask with like two eye slits and a mouth slit.
All right.
And that's Dr. Doom.
And if you want to know what he's about in the comics, essentially he's got the he's the king of Latveria, so he's kind of like Black Panther, where he's got a whole nation behind him. He's got probably the brain of Tony Stark, where he's got a lot of robotics expertise.
Okay.
But then he also has mystical knowledge like Doctor Strange.
Oh, okay.
So he's like Black Panther, Doctor Strange, and Iron Man all in one person, and slightly evil from time to time.
Okay. All right. Interesting.
But yeah.
His outfit looks cool in this movie.
What?
Like it. It's edgy.
Let me see.
Edgy.
Hold on, I looked up the Superhero Squad.
Oh, I want to look that up.
You guys ever seen that, the Superhero Squad?
I have not. I kind of know of it. I've seen pictures. I've never actually watched it.
I actually watched it.
Or is it?
Both of those were.
Oh my god.
It actually was funny from time to time. I had no reason to watch it because it was definitely not my age demographic when it was on TV. But me being the nerd I was in high school, I still watched it from time to time. But yeah. Tanner, let's hear your plot thoughts on Rise of the Silver Surfer, or Silver Surfer, whatever it is. All right.
So, you know, Galactus is hungry, wants to eat planets. So the Silver Surfer finds Earth.
What a mood.
And he just kind of flies around. He just kind of flies around it and creates anomalies. Like I said earlier, like the ocean around Japan freezes. It snows in Egypt. There's a blackout in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's just kind of flying around and creating craters.
Interesting.
I don't know why the craters is just something for Galactus to get to the core, maybe. I don't know.
That's what my thought was, but
yeah. But he's doing it. And then, well, actually, during his anomalies, he actually like unfreezes Dr. Doom.
Oh, okay.
Dr. Doom is now free. And then the government, well, Reed and Sierra are about to get married, and the government shows up saying they want Reed to help track this anomaly. And so he builds a tracker behind her back to try to track him, but it turns out he's actually can detect that he's being tracked, so he shows up to their wedding.
Oh.
Doesn't really do much, he's kind of just is a presence there, creates chaos, like it causes another blackout, and a helicopter crashes and lands on the roof of their wedding.
Okay.
And then Johnny actually goes out there and chases the Silver Surfer around the country, and then the Silver Surfer eventually puts him in a chokehold and then like drops him. As he's passed out falling, and then he has the ability to swap powers with the other Fantastic Four. So they go around swapping powers, because what else would you do with a movie with people that have powers? To cause chaos and conflict.
I don't know.
So anyways, eventually Reed figures out how to like where he's going next, and they just figured London, England. So they go to London with the government, and the chaos ensues, and like the London Eye, the giant Ferris wheel, starts to fall apart. So Reed stretches out to try to hold it together, and the thing's holding it up, and Johnny accidentally bumps into Reed, and they swap powers. So Johnny becomes like a hot flat pancake on the sidewalk, and Reed uses Johnny's fire powers to fix the eye.
Hmm.
Well,
falling off. And then the government's all mad because they let the Silver Surfer escape.
Wow.
And then Victor Von Doom shows up and offers his help. And of course the Fantastic Four don't trust him because he was a villain.
Right. Naturally.
And they come up with a plan to like capture him the next place he'll appear, which is in Germany. So they're successful. They discover that the surfboard is the cause of his powers, not him. So when they separate him, he loses his power and is no longer the Silver Surfer, but just a gray man. No longer shiny. And then they decide to go behind the government's back to like ask him. And so Sue, you know, talks to him about why he's doing it.
And then he still has the power to have a stomach television.
Yeah.
What?
He shows her his backstory with like a little hologram on his stomach.
Wow.
He's basically a Teletubby. Like one man, but looks like a man.
He's a great Teletubby. He's not tubby, he's lean. He's a tele-lean.
He's muscular.
Telemuscular.
That might be the best quote I've heard.
Anyways, they let him escape. Galactus shows up. And okay, then
Tanner won. Goodbye, everybody.
And Sue gets hurt, stabbed, or whatever. And then he heals her, but she's still like knocked out. So they give their powers to Johnny. I forget exactly what Johnny does with the powers. I can't remember.
Well, he has to fight Dr. Doom, who's got the surfboard now.
That's right. Dr. Doom stole the surfboard from the government. So he was using it and summoning Galactus while he did it, I think. And then so Johnny defeats Dr. Doom with all their powers combined. Then the Silver Surfer gets his surfboard back and he kills Galactus. And Earth is saved. Sue and Reed get married.
Yeah.
And they fly off in the Fantastic Car, which is a Dodge, has a Hemi. And product placement, and then they make a four in the sky at the end.
Yeah, but at the end of both of those movies, either Johnny or the Fantastic Four car uses their smoke or fire trail to make a number four with the circle around it in the sky.
Oh, okay.
Because they know that this is the end of their movie.
They are aware.
That's how they celebrate. Yeah. That they're done. Their contract's over.
And then we get Chris Evans as Captain America. In terms of like showing off who the characters are and like taking them on a journey, do you feel like the plot works for that?
Probably a little bit. Not so much for the Thing in this one, interestingly. Like, he doesn't actually, nothing really happens for him. But I think Johnny kind of learns to be more independent and mature to an extent.
Yeah.
And then Sue and Reed, their marriage, you know, their relationships, like, sure, there is had a issues at the beginning, but they're happily married at the end.
Yeah.
Like all good movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great love story.
Great love story, for sure. Especially relevant for me and Alexa being engaged.
Avery, the lesson is don't go working behind her back on your wedding day.
I won't work on any scientific projects because I wouldn't know what to do with them if I did. All right. I guess I'll get into the plots for Fan4Stick then. So the plot has probably a lot more going on than the first two movies, but essentially what it is a young Reed Richards discovers that he can build a teleportation machine. His friend Ben helps him. And then when he's at the high school science fair, he demonstrates this, which gets them disqualified because they think it's a magic show, which anyway, it's still better than a volcano. So who cares if it's magic? Dr. Franklin Storm and his daughter Sue Storm see them and they're like, hey, we're trying to do the same thing here. Why don't you come and work with us? And he's like, oh yeah, sure. So then they take him to the Baxter building. They recruit Victor Von Doom, who is this disgruntled hacker type now. But Victor Von Doom joins the project and he kind of sneers at the fact that they've recruited Reed right out of high school, but then Reed and him start to get along a little more. Reed and Sue start to connect over their passion for science and everything. And then Dr. Franklin Storm brings on his son, Johnny. After Johnny goes street racing and then he crashes his car and basically, he tells Johnny he can get his car back if he comes and works with him. Cause Johnny is actually a super skilled engineer. And he helps them build the teleportation device. And he actually built the car that he crashed from scratch, turns out. So anyway, amidst all this, the government is pressuring Dr. Storm, telling him that he shouldn't have so much faith in all these teenagers and everything, which they're not teenagers, they're legally adults, but it's fine. So then they build a machine, it ends up working, and then the government's like, well, this is great. Now we can get some guys from NASA to go over to this other dimension and make history. And they're all upset about this because they wanted to do it themselves. So then later that night, Reed, Johnny, and Victor are all getting drunk over the fact that they can't be the ones to discover this or go and explore this other dimension / planet for themselves, because everyone's heard of Neil Armstrong, but they haven't heard of the guy that built the first space shuttle. So they decide they want to be Neil Armstrong in this scenario. So Reed calls up his friend Ben and tells him since he's been there since the beginning, he wants them to be there now. So Ben, making sure that Reed doesn't hurt himself, he decides to join them. But these drunk scientists get in their little teleportation machine. They go to the planet, and then Sue sees from her computer that someone has activated the machine. So she gets down there, and she's trying to bring them back. So while they are all teleported into the other dimension, they start going exploring. They find this little trail of like this green electric lava type stuff. And then Victor says they should go follow it. So they do. And then Victor touches it and then it goes all volatile. The whole landscape starts like becoming explosive, like it's erupting and everything. Victor ends up falling into all this energy and it looks like he dies. Yeah. They end up almost escaping, and then the explosions are basically sending fire into Johnny's little port. All like a rock slide slams into Ben, and then it's like stretching Reed out. And then Sue on the other side is trying to bring them back. The energy ends up hitting her too, and it makes her phase in and out of the visible spectrum, which is what, so all the accidents is what gives them their powers. Then after that, there's no plot. Just kidding. That's basically the truth.
Not really.
But
1 year later.
1 year later, Reed has gone on the run from the government. He's trying to find a cure for them all. Ben is really mad at Reed for abandoning them, even though Reed is trying to help them. But Ben is now being used as the government, by the government as a weapon. Johnny's training to do the same thing. Sue is training to get her powers better because she has to, but she also wants to fix the teleportation machine so they can go back and cure themselves. They end up tracking down Reed. Reed helps them fix the machine. They send a group onto the Planet Zero, I think is what they call it. So this group actually finds Victor Von Doom, who now looks like a mutated crash dummy with with a really stupid looking hood and cape, which is because his suit ended up fusing to his body from the magma and everything. So anyway, they bring Victor back to Earth, and the government official wants them to tell him everything he knows. And then Victor's like, hey, that's my world now, and I won't let you destroy it like you're destroying mine. So then Victor goes on a murder spree, killing everyone in the building. Yeah. And then he starts sucking. He activates the teleportation machine, opens a portal that's basically sucking in everything within sight into that world and destroying it. So the Fantastic Four, who they are not known as yet, decide they got to stop him. They try to fight him each on their own individually. It doesn't work. And then when they realize they work together, then they actually do beat him. Ben punches him into the portal, which seemingly dissolves him. And they go back into the real world. And now there's nothing left but a crater. And they tell the government that they will not work for them, but they want all their money and all the resources to be their own. And for some reason, the government just agrees to it. And then they're like, we need a name. And they start arguing over the name. And then Reed's like, look how far we've come. And Ben says, yeah, it's fantastic. And Reed goes, what did you say? And he says, it's fantastic. And then that's the end of the movie.
And then we never got a sequel or X-Men crossover.
Yeah, there's going to be a planned X-Men crossover at one point. But yeah.
That would be so cool, actually. I was excited for that.
Yeah. I mean,
not with that Fantastic Four.
There's not much as a whole you can say to save this plot, because they just kind of lose it towards the end of the movie after that 1 year gap. And like we said before, studio interference probably had a lot to do with that. There's also been reports that the director, Josh Trank, was unprofessional, so maybe he even wasn't able to finish the film that he had set out to make. So who knows really what was going on there. But in general, I thought it was really cool that instead of going to space like traditionally, and like we've seen in a lot of other films in this genre, they decided to go to another dimension. And that was a way that we could see something that we hadn't seen before. And we also get to see their journey as scientists, which I think is cool. And That's something that wasn't really emphasized in the other movies as much. So yeah. And I also liked how Ben being forced into this life of being a weapon for the government while Reed was on the run doing what he wanted to do was also kind of a mirror to when, before they got powers, when Reed got to go off to be a scientist and Ben had to stay at home and live in the junkyard still. So there's cool little things like that that I think really stuck out to this film. And if it had been fleshed out, it definitely could have been a much better film.
All right.
So we're getting down into it, but real quick, we're going to talk about these next three aspects. Just kind of give a short version of your thoughts on this so we don't take up too much more time for it. But yeah, Mason, what did you think of the action of Fantastic Four 2005?
I thought it was bad.
It was bad?
I didn't. Okay. The final fight was, I don't know. It felt clunky. It really did. I don't know if maybe it had to do with part with the special effects or they just didn't really know how to like make them fight, if that makes sense. Because like, if you think about it, in a fight, how much can, you know, Reed Richards really do?
Yeah,
I'm sure in the comics they've found really creative ways for him to do stuff, but I felt like the movies were like, we don't know what to do. He basically threw a mailbox at Dr. Doom of his time in that fight. And that was really the only like action, I would say. There were other things.
I mean, action.
Yeah, I know. I'm getting to the, there was when the Human Torch was snowboarding with some random doctor that he met, I thought that, you know, was kind of cool just because he discovered his powers,
yeah,
some more of his powers and stuff like that.
He made that was probably the
best. If we're like talking like just action like that, it was good. But if we're talking action where it's fighting, which was really only towards the end, it could have been a lot better.
I mean, action too, I think, especially for that movie, is just like them doing superhero stuff. So like on the bridge where they're all working together, that's kind of action.
It was, the action was okay, but then the ending just really did it in for me where they just kind of seemed lost and didn't know how to make them all work together well, which I actually think yours struggled with too when they were in that little realm. I didn't like the action in that either.
Yeah.
So it sounds like these movies get set up pretty okay, and then they just kind of crash and
burn. They fizzle out hardcore, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, some of them have good starting points or some good story beats, and they just don't know what to do with them in the end.
Right.
To, like, drive it home.
Tanner, what did you think of the action in Silver Surfer?
Okay. I don't know. I feel like it wasn't quite, like, the stakes weren't there.
Yeah.
Like the wedding scene, like when the helicopter crashes, like the only moment where you felt worried was when like the kind of tail of the thing was spinning around to hit the blonde girl. That was like the only moment where you felt a little bit on edge, but other than that, you're like, oh, they got this, they can easily stop this helicopter from
gotcha.
You think she would have heard and it without the wind or something.
Yeah. Well, she's blind though, no one is around her, she didn't know where she could go, she's on a rooftop.
I would just
like
move,
there's also like 70 people that ran away before it like fell on the roof too. Yeah. So why didn't someone grab her? But so then Johnny chasing the Silver Surfer, like that was kind of a cool moment.
Yeah, that was
the Silver Surfer like kill us like phase through buildings. So that was cool.
Yeah,
and then
yeah, manipulates molecules around him.
But really, like in terms of like, I don't think Reed really didn't use his powers for fighting in that movie at all.
I just feel like they didn't know how to use it ever.
Like the biggest thing I remember him like using his powers for in that movie was like dancing at the bachelor party.
Yeah.
End of Guardians of the Galaxy. And then, dance off, bro.
There was that. And like, I remember using like the thing, like the biggest accomplishment he did from a power perspective is like stopping the helicopter and then trying to hold up the eye in London.
Yeah.
I like the final fight. I don't remember him doing much of anything. Same thing with Sue. Didn't like she's used her force field on the helicopter and then didn't really use her powers at the end of the movie because they and then they all gave their powers to Johnny, stop Dr. Doom. So like it was kind of a good, it was a cool one-on-one fight between them for like the time that that movie was made, but nothing like crazy.
Yeah.
Mm.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Mason did kind of allude to this with the action of Fan Four Stick too, where the end fight, which is really the only like superhero versus villain fight, was really subpar. Not much to rave about there. They kind of, they couldn't do it and then they did it.
Yeah.
but before that, there were a couple cool sequences. One thing that Tanner kind of talked about with Mr. Fantastic is he doesn't really do much fighting. He actually did get a scene where he was like fighting the soldiers when they were trying to bring him in. And I thought that was cool how they showed his combat, where he, it was kind of similar to how they used Elastigirl's fighting style and the Incredibles, where it's more just like elongated punches and kicks, but not like weaving around like a spaghetti monster. So it just kind of felt more like one-on-one combat, and it looked cooler. And then with Dr. Doom, when he first goes on his murder spree and he doesn't actually fight any of the villains, I thought that was really cool and it made him look really terrifying. And he just uses his psychic powers to like make people's heads explode and like crash into things and stuff like that. So it was like a scene from Carrie almost. So that was cool. But other than those two highlights, I wouldn't say there's much to this. It's not so much an action movie, I think, is the issue here. But yeah. All right, so let's talk about the acting real quick with these. Mason, what'd you think of the acting, which is pretty much going to be similar for Tanner's, I assume.
Probably. They didn't, I mean, it wasn't cringeworthy, but it wasn't great. I feel like Jessica Alba was actually not that great at all. I didn't like her performance as Sue Storm. I just felt like
I thought she was cringeworthy in the second one, to be honest, too, in some scenes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think she was cringeworthy in the first one. I just feel like they kind of just wanted to get Jessica Alba as kind of the eye-popping, ooh, she's in this. So they dropped her in. It wasn't because, you know, her astute acting abilities.
Gotcha.
Everybody else, I mean, held their own. I feel like Dr. Doom, I think he portrayed kind of a menacing presence, but I feel like it was too little too late at that point, if that makes sense. I just feel like they used him in not the greatest way, but when he was on screen, I paid attention, and it was good acting. I feel like everybody else was just kind of there. They didn't do bad, but they didn't have like a performance that, you know, stood out.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tanner, do you agree with most of that?
I agree with most of that. Doom in the second one was just pointless. I feel like the actor there was just, well, first off, you know, like, why was he healed? Because the actor probably didn't want to have to deal with all the makeup and stuff.
Yeah. So, usually how it goes.
And he's just kind of there, probably fulfilling a contract.
Yeah.
But I will say standout performance, Doug Jones as Silver Surfer.
As the body actor for the Silver Surfer.
As the body actor.
Yeah.
Lawrence Fishburne was the voice. He did a good job with the voice.
Yes.
But I'm just a big Doug Jones fan because I've actually worked with him on a movie in college.
Flexing.
I didn't know you worked with him.
Oh, yeah. I worked with him. I met him, got pictures taken, worked with him. We filmed him.
Wow.
Mic'd him up for his scene.
Wow.
Audio and stuff. Tanner specifically wanted this one just for that slip in right there.
He's a cool guy. He's the nicest guy you'll ever meet.
Yeah.
Lexa. He does a lot of character body stuff.
Lexa and I, for Halloween, actually watched a movie that he was in. He was the Fawn in Pan's Labyrinth.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And the seeing eye thing with the hands.
Oh, yeah. And the, too. Yeah, he was the saggy skin monster guy.
Okay, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about him now. I didn't like that.
He's currently on, he's currently Saru on Star Trek Discovery on CBS All Access.
Hmm.
Where he, I think one of the few roles where he actually uses his own voice.
Yeah. He was sorry.
He's Abe Sapien in the Hellboy movies.
Yeah. Another Guillermo del Toro.
And then he was the fish creature in Oscar winning Shape of Water.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Super cool.
It's cool that he did this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Okay, so Doug Jones. We all stand Doug Jones, especially Tanner. So last but not least, the villains. We all have...
Wait, you didn't say anything about your
shoot,
acting.
Yeah, I didn't say. So I feel like in terms of casting, every one of these... casting choices was a win. Like, they embodied the characters, I feel, especially at certain moments. You can see it and hear it in their voices. One thing I will say, and based on like the behind the scenes rumors that like the director was super difficult to work with, and studio interference and vice versa, none of them seem like they want to be there. Like, they all kind of give dry performances. And like, I've seen all these actors in other projects, and they all are super good. And like, so I think that's as unfortunately like a misfire that they couldn't get them to gel together right, for whatever reason. Something wasn't going right on the production side. But in terms of embodying their characters, though, I will say like the casting is spot on, and they all seem like actual scientists and everything, which is cool, and not just like supermodels dressed as scientists.
Okay.
But yeah, okay. Last but not least, the villain / villains. All three of us have Dr. Doom as a villain. Tanner gets a couple more added onto his, but Mason, how was Dr. Doom in your Fantastic Four?
As stated before, well, granted, on comic book accuracy, because I know a lot of people love that, spot on. Acting wise, he was good. He was menacing, and he was powerful in the end, because they were like looking around like, how do we stop this guy? We don't really know what to do. And Sue, when she had her like her force field, she could generate. She could barely like reflect his electric attacks. So they made him menacing. But again, I just feel like they showed not enough of it, so that it didn't really drive home, you know, how fearsome and deadly he was. He was a good villain. If anything, I feel like the show just needed more of the Doom side of it. Not like Victor Von Doom. They needed the Doctor Doom.
So do you think this movie would have benefited from having an additional villain like Tanner's, or just one is good enough?
No, just one. Like, I think if they would have just given Dr. Doom more screen time and more weight, and just, I don't know how they do it, but just work him into the movie more. Maybe they have a couple battles with him, or maybe you see him lash out somehow in some way.
Yeah,
just more of just Dr. Doom, because I feel like, well, Tanner will get into it, but I think sometimes too many villains is bad. So I think they did a decent job on him, but they just showed Dr. Doom too late.
Gotcha.
Yeah, Tanner, how do you feel about your villains? You got Dr. Doom, Silver Surfer for the beginning of it, and Galactus.
A big giant Nimbus cloud.
So Galactus is just kind of pointless. Like, he's only there to be like the inciting incident, or like, you know, the reason everything's happening.
Yeah, this foreboding.
He's just a cloud coming to eat the earth. And he is easily defeated. Like, the Silver Surfer just killed him.
Yeah.
That was it.
He just shoots his energy.
I think the Silver Surfer was like a cool villain for the first half when he like was a villain. Because it's just kind of like this menacing thing that no one really knows what he is. He didn't talk much. He's just kind of there doing what he needs to do, and no one can stop him easily.
Yeah.
Until they figure out the science behind how to stop him. And then he turns good. Which leads to Dr. Doom being the kind of the final battle, in a sense, again. And this time it was kind of easily defeated because Johnny had the powers of all of them. And his motivation, Dr. Doom's motivation, I don't know his motivation, is just to have power.
Yeah. All right. So, in terms of Fanforstic, Dr. Doom, I thought it was cool that they fleshed out his relationship with the team more. But then when he actually is a villain in the second half, he's just like very vague on his motivations. Like, he's like, well, this world is my home now. Even though there's like literally nothing going on in that world, like, it doesn't show like there's any creatures there or anything that he's trying to protect. Like, he just really hates the earth for some reason. But he did look cool when he used his powers, I thought, more so than some of the other movies. But that's my personal opinion there. I like that they showed how smart he was, because he is supposed to be a scientist. That's why he's called Dr. Doom and not Mr. Doom. Also, I'd say the government was kind of a villain in this movie because they wanted to use the Fantastic Four for military purposes. Not saying just because you work for the military you're bad or whatever. We've got some friends and family in the military. I will say trying to use people against their will to go into combat is pretty bad. Anyway, those are the villains in Fanforstic.
Okay.
All right. And that brings us to the end of our little Thanksgiving Fantastic Four discussion. And we have our own visible woman, Alexa, is going to tell us. She's never, I'm pretty sure she's seen Fanforstic.
Nope.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I've never seen these movies.
Okay, she's never seen any of them.
This is all based on intrigue and how well you sold it, which all of you were like, it's not good, so it's all your own fault.
We're saving you, so you're welcome.
All right, I suppose. Okay, so how do I do this?
I mean, you could say the final scores for each one and then say the winner. You want to say that?
The scores were 22, 23, and
22. 22,
23, and 22. So each was at 1 through 5, and there were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 categories, so out of 30.
So 23 out of 30 was the winner.
And that was Fantastic Four.
The first one?
No, I'm just saying all of them.
What? Oh my gosh.
Just one.
Okay, so the winner is actually Fantastic Four, The Rise of the Silver Surfer.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Tanner sucks.
Ah, man,
that's the best out of all three of them. So
I feel like I tried the hardest because I had to, though. But yeah,
definitely.
I will say, I watched it earlier today, and watching it looking for all the good things helped me appreciate it more and made me sad that we didn't get a good resolution to the beginning of the movie.
I definitely need to watch it again. It's been a while.
Yeah. Well, congratulations, Tanner. How do you feel?
Thank you. Feel good. I can do it.
Is your is something blocking your mic, Tanner? You sound a little muffled.
No, I'm not doing it.
Okay. Maybe Zoom picked up on it. I don't know. But yeah. All right.
He just went and he's like, I'm out.
He's like, you don't need to hear any more of my thoughts.
I'm gone, guys.
Peace out. All right. Well, that was kind of interesting. Like I said, this is different than what we normally do. We normally only talk about one movie and everything garbage about it. So this is a little bit different. But thank you, Alexa, for joining us. She's peacing out. She's done. before we go, Alexa, if you want to come back, you can plug something if you want.
I don't have anything to plug.
You want
to
plug your...
Whisper cut.
What? You can.
Okay. you can find Alexa's art on her Instagram page. Alexa is a super amazing oil painter, and she takes commissions. So definitely head on to her page and like that. So her Instagram page is _Alex.A.Thompson with a P. And then her website is artofalex-a.com. You can find her portfolio there and you can DM her on Instagram or send her an email through her website and commission a piece for that. And I also do the same on my social media. You can do that on cardigancomics.com, and that's comics with an X. As an X-Men. But yeah, if you like all the episode art, I have been making that as well. So you can commission fun little cartoon pieces there like that. Tanner, Mason, do you have anything that you want to plug that you're working on or that you enjoyed consuming as a piece of media recently?
Destiny 2, duh. The best game out there. Huge expansion tomorrow. I did call off work for it.
That's great.
Oh my gosh. I would say only you. I'm sure it's not only you.
No, because Rusty did it and a couple other people I'm going to be playing with did.
All right. Nice. Destiny 2 expansion.
Beyond Light.
Yeah.
I don't really watch anything new lately. And kind of, I guess The Mandalorian coming out.
Yes.
The Mandalorian.
Season 2 is out.
Yeah.
It's great.
No spoilers, but it's been great. I'm very, very curious to see where they're going to go because we're 2 out of 8 episodes in. So it's only 6 left. And you're like, what are they going to do in only 6 episodes?
I know.
I think some of our questions won't be answered this season, but I'm okay with that because that just means we get more.
Yeah. Yep, I've also been enjoying The Mandalorian on Disney Plus. For the Comics Crunch Club this month, sister podcast of Nerds Polish Turds, we are reading the graphic memoir Fun Home, which is by Alison Bechdel. And for all the feminist film students out there, she created the Bechdel test. Which is basically a media metric for seeing how good a movie is at portraying female characters, which I think all these movies fail at. But anyway, super, super great comic, getting into her life and everything. Definitely check it out. check the podcast when it comes out towards the end of this month. And and you can watch all these Fantastic Four. No, you can watch Fantastic Four and Fan4stic on Disney Plus if you want. And if you've never seen them before, if you're curious, you can also watch the Fantastic Four and Silver Surfer cartoons on there, which I have not watched, but I've heard are better. And watch The Mandalorian. And play Destiny 2. And read Fun Home. All right. Well, thank you, gentlemen. You have been a fantastic half to our Fantastic
Four tonight.
I was thinking them first.
No, I mean, what word did you say? What modifier?
Just quoting the movie, dude.
And what? Oh, fantastic. Okay. She was quoting it, too. I didn't realize.
Come on. I haven't even seen the movie.
That was...
She's gonna come on, Mavery.
Thanking you guys in honor or something. Thank you, Alexa, for joining us. But yeah. All right. Y'all have a night. Okay.